Welcome to the 292nd episode of the 4th and 24 podcast with Patrick Winograd. I am your host for today, Patrick Winograd. In this edition of the podcast, we are going to review my weekend predictions, look forward to the college football playoff, and recap the one bowl game that did happen over the weekend, and then look at week 15 in the NFL, the last week in college basketball, and the last week in the NBA, which includes the NBA Cup semifinals. Not the finals yet. Those are tomorrow, or later today, actually. But let's jump right in with a look back at my weekend predictions, which are posted every Thursday on our website, 4thand24.com. Starting in the NFL, I went 2-2 in those predictions. In the NBA, I went 3-1. And in college basketball, I went 2-2, bringing me to 7-5 this week. A 1,217 and 765 overall record. Same winning percentage as last week at 61.4%. Going back to specific games here, we'll start in the NBA where I went 3-1. Best week of any league was that league. I think I could have gone 4-0 pretty easily in that in NBA predictions. LeBron came back and led the Lakers to a 116-110 win over the Grizzlies. As in denial as it might sound, I would have picked the Lakers if LeBron was healthy heading into the week. I actually still picked the Lakers for a little bit. I had it as the Lakers being the winner of that game for a little bit, even with LeBron out, just because I thought they were in really dire need, of a bounce-back victory, and they almost felt like they could maybe pull that off. And then, based on LeBron's status, I decided to abandon that pick. And then, of course, he kind of randomly, after being, listed as questionable, but J.J. Redick saying he didn't know when he was going to return and all that, he just kind of randomly came back, and he helped the Lakers get that victory over the Grizzlies on Sunday night. That was the one game I got wrong. The other games were the NBA Cup semis. I picked the Bucks to beat the Hawks. They did so, 110-102. More on that later. The Thunder beat the Rockets, 111-96. And those were two correct predictions. And then finally, the third correct prediction, the Timberwolves beating the Spurs, 106-92, to bring that record to 3-1 in the NFL. The Eagles beat the Steelers, 27-13, in the battle for Pennsylvania, if you want to go there, I guess. The Bills beat the Lions 48-42. The Eagles game I got right. This game I got wrong in terms of those AFC-NFC crossover clashes. That puts me at 1-1 in those games. And then the Buccaneers beat the Chargers 40-17, which means that I went 1-2 in the AFC-NFC clashes because that I picked the Chargers in that game. They were at home against the Bucs. Two pretty evenly matched teams, so I figured, why not just go with the home team? Didn't really have a strong lean either way in that game, but the Buccaneers played a really, really, really strong game, despite the fact that, they're a little bit shorthanded right now. They've had some injuries that are now plaguing them as we get into the later portion of the year, but they were able to play through that, and they played a strong game, and obviously they dominated the Chargers this weekend, which is really important because that was arguably, I think, the hardest game left on the Buccaneers' schedule. Unless you think that the Cowboys are better than the Chargers, which is ridiculous thing to say. So hardest game on their schedule. They came away with the victory. I lost the prediction, but then on Sunday Night Football, I got it right. The Packers beat the Seahawks 30-13, brought that record to 2-2. And then in college basketball, ton of close games. I felt it would be really cheap to only pick home teams. And, technically there were only two home games in here anyway, because the other two games are neutral courts, but Purdue playing in Indianapolis also is more of a home game anyway, so I basically treated it as three home games and one neutral site game. And frankly, UConn playing Gonzaga at MSG is really a UConn home game too, the way that they tend to take over that building. They call it Stores West or Stores North. I don't actually know the direction now that I think about it, but they call it Stores something. Anyway, point being, UConn and Purdue both played neutral site games that weren't really neutral site games. So it felt like I was picking four home teams. So because of that, I picked Marquette instead of Dayton. Another game that I can say I didn't really have a strong lean in, and I really didn't know who to go with, so I went with Marquette. I felt good about how they played the season. Felt really good about how Dayton's played the season, though, too. But despite the home court advantage, I thought Marquette would pull that one out, and Dayton was able to pull off the upset. Marquette led most of the game, I think, for the first, 28 minutes or something like that, pretty much. Or they led for 28 minutes, mostly the first mostly in the first 30 minutes of the game, and then Dayton kind of made a strong run at the end of the game with their press defense that actually led to their comeback victory in the tournament last year as well. That's kind of a patent of that team. That's what they love to do, and they're really, really good at it. Really catches teams off guard. But Dayton won that game 71-63. Number 6 in the country goes down. Number 17, A&M, beat number 11, Purdue, 70-66 in Indianapolis. So despite that kind of home-favored crowd, they did win that game, 70-66. A&M just way too physical for Purdue. I'll go into more of these games, into these games later. I'll kind of brush over them now because there weren't that many important games in college basketball. These were pretty much four of like the five or six most important games. Cincinnati beat Xavier. Cincinnati ranked 22nd in the Crosstown Shootout, 68-65. Got that one right. And then number 18, UConn beat number 8, Gonzaga, 77-71. I also got that one right. The first two were the ones I got wrong. But without any further ado, let's turn to college football with a look back at the first bowl game and a preview of the upcoming CFP games. Of course, no predictions this weekend, or last weekend, I should say, for college football because of the fact that it was just one bowl game. South Alabama beat Western Michigan 30-23. The Broncos end up with 6-7 season. South Alabama ends the season 7-6. They were, I think, favored by a decent amount in this game. My personal opinion, thought that South Alabama was going to win that one pretty easily. I had them picked for pretty high confidence in Bowl Mania, if that means anything to anybody. So kind of not very surprised by that result. Western Michigan, excuse me, had the lead early in this game, but South Alabama really capitalized on some turnovers by Western Michigan and just completely took over the game in the second quarter. I never really looked back from there. But that's all I really have about that game. Of course, I did watch the game, but have not much to say about it. Also, Navy beat Army for what it's worth. Obviously, Army had already won the conference championship game, which is kind of an oddity of the new format, with Navy and Army both being in a conference and being in the same conference. So despite the fact that Navy beat Army, doesn't count as a conference game. Army had already won the conference championship, had already, A, won the bid to get into the conference championship game, and B, had won the game itself against Tulane last week, or 2 weekends ago at this point. And it's really interesting because, you know, if this was a normal year, maybe Army would have played Navy, or maybe not a normal year, I should say, but, you know, in another scenario, it's possible that Army could have been the highest-ranked Group of Five champ, or highest-ranked champion, or a high enough ranked champion, yeah, the highest ranked Group of Five champion, that would have meant that maybe they're in the playoff even after losing to Navy, which would be crazy, but it's possible that that could happen in a future year. American is definitely one of the conferences, I would say probably the premier conference outside of the Power Four, and honestly, most years, the American champion will be that fifth ranked champion, at least until the Pac-12 rebuilds itself, and maybe even beyond that, to be quite honest. But anyway, moving on from that, talking about the college football playoff, since there's no reseeding, we're going to actually predict all of it. I have my dad's predictions here written down on paper. Of course, he is not here on this podcast, but I do have all of his predictions written in paper. I can't give explanations for them, but I can give explanations for mine. So starting with the Friday matchup, number 10, Indiana against number 7, Notre Dame. I have Notre Dame winning this one 27-21. Again, we are going to go through all of these. I'll go through these games with score predictions for me, and then just move on all the way from the quarters through the national championship game, because again, no reseeding. One of my gripes before I actually move on with that Notre Dame prediction, I really hate that system. I mean, there should be reseeding in this tournament, especially because of the way that it works with the auto bids and how, you know, Boise State and Arizona State aren't ranked 3-4, but they're seeded 3-4, so you can get some really lopsided matchups in here. Frankly, I think Texas and Arizona State at the Peach Bowl is one of those. Texas is not only going to end up with home field, basically, in that game, but they're also a much better team than Arizona State. No shame to the Sun Devils. But, you know, Texas has been ranked higher all season long. They have a better record than Arizona State. They're going to continue to have a better record than Arizona State, in my opinion. But look, there are some unfair matchups in here. And then, you know, you get a team like Oregon who has to play the winner of Ohio State and Tennessee, as opposed to Boise State, who gets the winner of SMU and Penn State, which I would argue is actually an easier route for whether they play Penn State or SMU. Oregon looked a lot more uncomfortable against Ohio State than they did against Penn State in the Big Ten Championship when they played. But moving on from that, going to the actual games, Notre Dame, like I said, I have them winning 27-21. I actually think that out of the teams that are playing in the first round, these are maybe not both of them, but Notre Dame is definitely one of the better teams. I'll get to that later. But Indiana, I think, you know, this is not a good matchup for them. I think that they're finally playing a defense that, you know, like Ohio State's defense can generate a lot of pressure and really stop what they do through the air. And also, I don't think Notre Dame is going to lose that battle in the trenches to the Indiana defensive line like a lot of teams have this season. Indiana has a pretty strong defensive line, but I don't think strong enough to take on the likes of Notre Dame. And I think that Notre Dame will be able to run the ball pretty efficiently with Jeremiah Love and Riley Leonard. And even if they don't score too well, I still think their defense is going to hold up well enough, especially with the home field advantage. So I have Notre Dame winning that matchup. Like I said, 27-21. Probably, I would guess, the lowest scoring game that there's going to be. Even though my score prediction is pretty similar in all these games, I think that this is probably the low scoring one if there's going to be one. Despite the fact that both of these teams have been explosive on offense, I think both of their defenses will come out with something to prove. Then, SMU and Penn State. I have Penn State winning this one. I know James Franklin haters always say he can't win the big game. I know James Franklin supporters will say, well, at least he's in a big game, because a lot of coaches don't get there. And I think that there's actually a lot more credit to that argument than people give it. But this is not a big game. I hate to say it. This just isn't a big game. They're not playing a top 10 team. They're playing SMU at home. It's not a neutral site. This is literally a whiteout game at Penn State. Yes, it's in the morning. Yes, it's like basically the equivalent of a big noon game. But, you know, I think Penn State plays Ohio State every year in these same circumstances, or Michigan every year in these circumstances, and they do worse because they're playing a better team. This is not the type of team that Penn State tends to struggle with. They struggle with the Oregons, the Ohio States, and the Michigans of the world. Obviously not this season for Michigan's sake, but normally. They don't struggle with teams like, you know, Wisconsin, who will be ranked in like the 15 to 20 range in the Big Ten occasionally, or the Minnesotas of the world. You know, they've lost to Minnesota. Obviously, they've lost to those teams at some point, but they have decent records against those teams. They don't struggle against teams kind of in this range. That's just kind of always how it's been for Penn State. I don't think they struggle in this game. I think they win 31 to 21. I would guess, you know, I can't speak on his behalf, but I would guess that if we were picking most likely upset, I think my dad would probably say Penn State is the one that's most likely on upset alert, just because he probably doesn't believe, he doesn't really believe too much in that team. I hate to say it, but it's true. Meanwhile, for me, I think the highest chance of an upset is number 12 Clemson against number 5 Texas. I do have Texas winning this game, but I will say Clemson has been playing a lot better later in the season. Clemson's defense is honestly up to the task of matching Texas's defense. And to be completely honest, Cade Klubnik at this point in the year is outplaying Quinn Ewers. Just point blank, period. He is playing better than Quinn is playing right now. I don't think there's any doubt in my mind about that. Ewers and that offense has been out of sync for a few games now. That was obvious in the Georgia game. That was obvious in the A&M game. I mean, their defense pitched a shutout, and the only way that A&M scored in that game, in that 21-7 victory, was because Ewers threw a pick six. That was the only way that A&M got on the board. And it wasn't really like Texas dominated that game offensively. They just had amazing field position. They forced some turnovers, and they really just kept getting the ball over and over and over again, and just kind of A&M's defense out over the course of the game. I don't think that Texas is coming in with much momentum. They just lost to a backup quarterback in an overtime game in the SEC championship game. And before that, basically, you know, yeah, they played A&M. They went on the road. They won that game, but they did not look good offensively. Clemson's defense is really, really good. Even if they gave up a ton of points in the second half to SMU, I think that was just SMU being on a mission trying to prove themselves as a playoff team. Texas doesn't have that kind of motivation. They're already in it. Yes, it's at home. But Clemson, they have a coach who's been there in these scenarios. Cade Klubnik is old enough now at this point that I think he's ready to deal with the moment. And frankly, Quinn Ewers obviously is too, but he hasn't played like it, and he's still a little bit banged up. So I do think that Texas wins this game. That is my prediction. But I can see the world, for the reasons I just outlined, where Clemson does win. It's definitely possible. It would set up a really interesting matchup between Arizona State and Clemson, the two teams that people are talking about as in, why are they in the playoff? Just because they won a conference championship, et cetera, et cetera. But that would be really funny if those teams ended up matching up. But with that, the last game, number 9 Tennessee against number 8 Ohio State. My dad and I both have Ohio State in this one. Also, I should mention my dad has the same predictions as me for all of these games. I actually don't think I was going through that, but We split later in the bracket, which is why I was going to wait to talk about it, and I'll talk about that in a second. I have Ohio State winning this one in a close one. There's nothing to me that really separates these two teams that much on the field, other than the fact that this is a home game for Ohio State, and I don't think Nico Iamaleva is ready to play in this kind of an atmosphere in a playoff game. So I'm picking Ohio State for that reason. Probably one of the only teams that has the talent to match up with any team in this bracket. And they also have home field advantage in this game. Like, Ohio State is the preseason number two team in the country. We all know what this team is capable of when it's playing at its peak. To have them playing a 9 seed in the first round at home, I can't pick against them despite the fact that I do have a feeling that not only are they going to lose at some point in this bracket, I'm very confident about that, actually, but I don't see it happening this early. I just don't see it. However, I will move on now to the quarterfinals. Obviously, we all have the same matchups. We would have Texas, Arizona State at the Peach Bowl, who would take on the winner of Oregon and Ohio State in the semifinals at the Cotton Bowl. Ohio State and Oregon is the Rose Bowl game. And then Penn State, Boise State at the Fiesta Bowl. Comfortable bowl game for Boise State there. And then Georgia and Notre Dame at the Sugar Bowl in the other quarterfinals. Those two would play each other in the Orange Bowl. The winner of those two games would play each other in the semifinals. I have to say, I'll go through my dad's predictions first, and then I'll say what I have to say about these games. My dad has Texas beating Arizona State. I fully agree there. Not going to really go into much detail there. I think that's just a mismatch. I think, frankly, Clemson is going to be a tougher matchup for Texas than Arizona State would be. I think that, frankly, whoever wins out of Texas and Clemson is going to beat Arizona State. Not only because they'll have a better crowd at that game, they'll have the home field advantage there. I think they're just better teams, honestly, both of them, both Clemson and Arizona State. I know Clemson has more losses than Arizona State, and they've had their struggles at the beginning of the season, but I think they played a South Carolina team that was the hottest team in the country, and they still barely lost and, frankly, should have won the game. And really, then they played an SMU team that's pretty good, and they were able to defeat them on a neutral field. So I still like Clemson in general. I just don't see them escaping that first-round matchup, but I could see, I really could see, if that Clemson-Texas game gets really close, maybe a fluky play in Clemson's favor or a call here or there might give Clemson that win, and then I really can see them moving past Arizona State. I definitely can see them getting all the way to the semifinals, but they're going to stop there. They're not going to beat those other teams in the Cotton Bowl. Don't. I'm not that crazy. But yeah, I have Texas beating Arizona State. That's what my dad has. We also both have Oregon beating Ohio State. I know this is starting to sound bad because we have all the same picks throughout the whole thing. We disagree on who the most likely teams are to be upset, though, in that first round and also probably in the quarterfinals, and I'm going to pick a team that he's not going to pick. Spoiler alert, getting there in a second. But yeah, we both have Oregon beating Ohio State in the Rose Bowl, despite the fact that Ohio State barely lost to Oregon earlier this year. Still think that's the right call. So yeah, Oregon and Texas in the Cotton Bowl. Those are our predictions for the semifinals. Then, moving on to the other quarterfinals, Boise State versus Penn State. I'm going to say it. My dad has Penn State beating Boise State. I have Boise State beating Penn State. We have talked about this and argued about this. He thinks that Penn State is, and I am speaking on his behalf because we've had this conversation off the podcast, obviously. He thinks that Penn State is used to playing teams like Boise State and that they're in kind of a comfort zone there, playing A, that level of team, and B, that style of team. My counterpoint to that is that I don't see why Boise State won't just do exactly what they did to Oregon to Penn State. I really don't see a reason to believe that Boise State can't move the ball on Oregon. And I really think that they are going to come into that game and probably be the underdogs despite having the higher seed. And I think Ashton Jeanty is going to come in angry because he finished second in the Heisman. So I think that Boise State has a motivational advantage in this game. And I also, frankly, think that Boise State's a better team than Penn State. I know that I probably have Penn State ranked higher than Boise State in our final poll. I think that's more of a matter of principle of the rankings in terms of ranking teams higher who have a tougher strength of schedule. That's just kind of what happens. But I think, all in all, with Boise State having weeks off, and a lot of motivation coming in from them, and the fact that now we're talking about Penn State and what I would actually describe as a big game, I think that Penn State is going to feel like they're the favorites, and they're going to get caught off guard a little bit by the fact that Boise State is actually going to be able to match their level, of physicality of intensity in this game, and I think Boise State wins it in the Fiesta Bowl. Another Fiesta Bowl masterclass by the Broncos is my prediction there. And the other game we also disagree on. My dad has Georgia beating Notre Dame in the Sugar Bowl. I don't have it. I think that Notre Dame beats Georgia. I'm not a strong, I'll put it this way. I'm not a strong believer of any team in this playoff. I really don't think, for multiple reasons, I couldn't give you a reason why I'm picking the national champion that I will end up picking. I just don't, I don't feel like this Oregon team is good enough to go 16-0 or whatever. I think it's 16-0. Yeah, it would be 16-0. It feels like they shouldn't be a 16-0 team. A team that lost to Northern Illinois does not feel like a team that should be contending for a title. But neither is a team with a backup quarterback. Not the team who lost to that team. And neither of the two conference champions of the weaker conferences feel like title contenders either. And then if you want to go to Ohio State, okay, they have two losses on the year. They lost to the team they're playing in the second round, if they even make it there. And they just lost on a home field to a 7-5 Michigan team. And now they're playing a top 10 Tennessee team on that same field. Do we really think they're going to win that game? They probably will, but who's to say that they do? It's not automatic. So I'm not very strong on any of these teams, to be quite honest with you. But I will say that having a backup quarterback who has not started any games, has not played in any big games other than the second half of the SEC championship game, where Georgia didn't really do much offensively, and as a team, they really didn't do much offensively in the whole game. Neither team did. I'm picking Notre Dame. I think Riley Leonard has the experience. I think that Notre Dame surprisingly will match Georgia's physicality enough to the point that they force some big turnovers on the defensive end, because that's where they really have the advantage in this game. I think the biggest disadvantage in this game is Notre Dame's, or biggest advantage, depending on which viewpoint you're looking at. I think Notre Dame overwhelms Georgia's offense if Gunnar Stockton is playing and Carson Beck can't play. I think that absolutely Notre Dame has that advantage, and that gap between Notre Dame's defensive level and Georgia's offensive level is bigger than I think the gap between Georgia's defensive level and Notre Dame's offensive level. I think Georgia's defense is also going to be able to smother Notre Dame's offense pretty well, but I think you get a low-scoring, ugly, 17-14 type game, and I think Notre Dame is the team that wins that one, because I think Gunnar Stockton makes a few mistakes. I think Riley Leonard, they don't even let him make the mistakes. They just try to run ground and pound, and if it works, it works, and if it doesn't, it doesn't. And I think Notre Dame wins that game against Georgia, which, of course, for me, sets up Oregon and Texas and then Notre Dame and Boise State. For my dad, it sets up Oregon, Texas, and then Penn State and Georgia. My dad really went all chalk. He has Georgia playing Oregon in the national championship after Oregon beats Texas and Georgia beats Penn State. For me, I do agree with the Oregon pick. I have them beating Texas. But at the same time, I have Notre Dame beating Boise State. I think that matchup, obviously, Notre Dame would be favored in. And I think, as dumb as it is to talk about who's the favorite, who's not, does it really matter? I think Notre Dame's favored in that matchup. I would take them in that matchup. And I'm pretty, I feel confident about that game. And I would also like to mention that, in my preseason bracket, or all the way going back to that, I had Georgia playing Oregon in the semifinals and Ohio State playing Texas in the semifinals. So three of those four teams I could pick if I wanted to. And I also had Notre Dame in the playoffs as a 7 seed, but I had them losing in the first round. In that bracket, they have outperformed my expectations, and I would say Georgia has obviously underperformed, especially given the fact they have a backup quarterback. Georgia was my initial national championship pick. I had them playing Texas. I'm backing off of that. I do really think that Oregon is going to play Texas, beat Texas, move on to the championship game against Notre Dame, and this is where I really go awry. I don't think Oregon should go 16-0. However, I don't think that Notre Dame is going to be the team to beat Oregon. I just don't see any of the teams in this bracket where I say this team is definitively better than Oregon, despite the fact that Oregon has gone undefeated. I think that Oregon's most likely chance to lose is probably in the Rose Bowl against Ohio State, or if the Cotton Bowl team is a Texas team that actually is in sync, then they probably lose that game. But Oregon already beat Ohio State. There's no reason to think they won't do it again. I don't think they've played any worse for the rest of the year than they did earlier in the year. So, I had them there. Texas, I'm not banking on them magically going in sync, so I'm picking Oregon there too. And, of course, setting up that Oregon-Notre Dame matchup, I'm just going to go with Oregon. I mean, I feel like gut feeling, it makes the most sense. My dad also has Oregon. He has them beating Georgia. I really wanted to be different here, and I thought about, you know what? I'm going to go on a limb. I'm going to say Notre Dame wins it all. I've talked about this team. I think they lost one fluky game. I'm changing my pick as we're talking through it. Everybody thinks Oregon's going to win. I really do think Notre Dame has a top five defense in this playoff. I think the offenses they're playing, they have the better matchup in all of those games, except for this Oregon game. But I think at the same time, this is the game where they really just elevate their level. And I think that Oregon just, you know, chokes a little bit under the pressure. And as dumb as it sounds, I have Notre Dame winning the national championship. I think it'd be fun, to be honest with you. I don't like Notre Dame. Obviously, we're Michigan fans, so of course I don't like Notre Dame. But at the same time, that's just what I see happening. I really feel like there are no dominant teams this year, and this year can't end with the one seed going 16-0 and winning it all, especially not against the two seed. That just doesn't feel like what has transpired all season was setting up for. I don't think that's going to happen. I think one of the teams in the bottom end of this bracket is going to come out of nowhere and win it, and I don't think it's going to be Georgia. I think all of the favorites are in the top of the bracket in terms of Oregon and Texas and Ohio State. Those are three of the four most talented rosters in the country. Georgia's the one on the other side of the bracket offsetting them. No one thinks Penn State can win a big game, so they kind of take a back seat. And no one's believing in Boise State, obviously. Notre Dame has a lot of holes that people poke, or a lot of flaws that people like to point out. SMU, obviously, everybody's writing off. Indiana, everybody's writing off. Why not one of these teams win it? And I think Notre Dame is that team. I think they actually have the talent. But that was a very, very lengthy preview of the playoff. But I think it's warranted. I mean, I think it's the most relevant thing going on in sports. But we will move on now to a look at NFL action of Week 15, starting in the NFC West, where the Rams beat the Niners 12-6 on Thursday Night Football. A grinded-out game, perhaps a preview of what a Georgia-Notre Dame game would look like with Gunnar Stockton on the field. But the Rams, very important game for them. Obviously, if they lose this game, both the Rams and the Niners and then eventually the Cardinals would all be 7-7, and they would be trailing the Seattle Seahawks. But instead, the Rams move to 8-6, the Niners take another blow, move down to 6-8, and because the Packers beat the Seahawks 30-13 on Sunday Night Football, that means that the Seahawks move to 8-6, and by virtue of the win earlier in the season over the Seahawks, the Rams are now in first place in the NFC West. Obviously, I am very happy about that. Both of those teams at 8-6, though, the lower-seeded team in that matchup, in terms of who would eventually lose out on the tiebreaker, would not make the playoffs. They would be behind the Packers, who are the sixth seed, behind the Vikings, who have already clinched a playoff spot, and we'll talk about them in a second, and then the Commanders, who are currently 9-5, 8-6, not good enough to make the playoffs. But speaking of that game, like I said, Packers beat the Seahawks 30-13, and I kind of foreshadowed it earlier, the Cardinals beat the Patriots 30-17. That means they're at 7-7. Nothing crazy happened in this game, obviously. Cardinals defense, I really like the signs that they showed this weekend. Obviously, held the Patriots to 3 points the first three quarters, so that's a good sign. They only let up touchdowns in garbage time. Those touchdowns didn't mean anything, so I'm not too worried about that. But the Cardinals played a good game, made it to 500, still in the playoff race. Then you have the Commanders. They escaped in a close one against the 5-9 Saints. Did the Saints get some gifts from the refs? Yes, they shouldn't have had time to have their final play of the game. Shouldn't have had time for the spike, which eventually set up the final play of the game where they did score, but then they went for two and the Commanders stopped them, which meant that the Commanders escaped with a 20-19 victory. The Commanders deserved to win this game. I mean, they did kind of choke it late. They were up 14-0 at halftime, gave up 19 points in the final two quarters. But at the same time, Commanders deserved it. They're 9-5 now. But in the rest of the NFC, not going to mention that division for the rest of this. Well, I will later, obviously, with the Eagles, but I'll get to that in a second. The NFC, like I said, the Buccaneers, they beat the Chargers. Actually, the NFC dominated the NFC-AFC crossover matchups, I would argue. The Buccaneers winning this game 40-17, mentioned it earlier. They are now 8-6 on the season. The Chargers also at 8-6. They are currently in the last playoff spot, and they look to be in a good position to hold that, obviously, because the three teams behind them are the Colts, the Dolphins, and the Bengals, who are all 6-8. So the Chargers at 8-6 still look fine to hold that position, even if I don't think they do play the Chiefs in the rest of the year either. So that would kind of be the hardest game, but that's not happening, so who cares? But the Chargers, they look fine despite that loss. The Buccaneers, meanwhile, in very good position. I think ESPN says they have an 80% chance to win the division. I think it's probably higher, to be honest, because after beating the Chargers like this, How is this team going to lose to the Cowboys? I don't see that happening. And then they play the Panthers and the Saints, I think, in their final two games. They're not losing either of those two games if a playoff spot is still on the line. Meanwhile, the Falcons, they go on the road and play at Washington at some point in their final three games and then also close out with other divisional games. It is interesting to note that the Falcons got to 7-7 last night by beating the Raiders 15-9 on Monday Night Football. But first of all, they look terrible. And second of all, they do have the tiebreaker over the Buccaneers, which is important in case one of these two teams were to slip up. But I think even if the Buccaneers lose one game, the way that the Falcons are playing right now and the fact that it's the Falcons, they're going to lose at least another game of the year. It might not even come against the Commanders, but they're definitely going to lose one more time this year. There is no way they end the season 3-0. I'm very confident in that. And if they do, I think the Buccaneers, frankly, also probably go 3-0. I would predict that. I don't think they're losing to the Cowboys when they know that the division is on the line. So the Buccaneers at 8-6, still in good position. They're in the 3 seed right now because they have a better winning percentage in conference games than the Rams do. And they also have a much better percentage than the Seahawks. So, and the Cardinals and the Niners. So the Bucs are probably going to end up with the 3 seed as long as they end up with a better record than the Rams or the Seahawks, or I guess technically the Cardinals or the Niners do, whoever wins the NFC West, of course. But moving on to the rest of the NFC and then getting into some crossover action. The Vikings beat the Bears 30-12 in the other Monday Night Football game. Vikings moved to 12-2. They clinched the playoff spot, currently in the 5th seed, of course, because despite the fact that the NFC North has three of the best 4 teams in the NFL, or sorry, in the NFC, not in the NFL, although you could make that argument, they, of course, only one of those teams can claim the 1 seed or the 2 seed as the divisional winner. The other two are going to be in the wild card. The Vikings, 12-2, clinched a playoff spot, but they're only as high as the 5th seed right now. Although, the Bills beat the Lions 48-42. They moved to 11-3 on the season. Unlikely to catch the Chiefs, who are 13-1, but still worth it to get above the Steelers there. Now the Bills in position for the 2nd seed in the postseason. Meanwhile, the Lions are now tied with the Vikings for that 1st seed. The Lions do play the Vikings at home at the end of the season, so the Lions need to get that one to get the 1 seed. That would be the one that would secure the division in the 1 seed. If not, they're going to be the 5 seed. Speaking of those Steelers, and the other team in contention for the 1 seed in the NFC, the Eagles beat the Steelers 27-13. Talked about it earlier. There's a lot of controversy about, you know, Jalen Hurts and not throwing the ball enough and not throwing the ball efficiently enough, whatever you want to talk about. The Eagles are fine. It's really a dumb conversation. I don't know how many games they've won in a row, but it's a lot more than your favorite team. I think that's the best way to put it. They clinched a playoff spot. The Lions already did as well. But at 12-2, they are right there with the Lions in terms of that tiebreaker. It is going to the Lions because of a better conference record, excuse me. But the Eagles are still tied for the 1 seed. Easily could get it depending on who wins that NFC North battle. And then you have the Ravens, who benefited from the Eagles beating the Steelers. They now move to 1 game back in the division of the Steelers. They won 35-14 over the Giants. They're at 9-5, looking pretty good for the playoff spot there. The Texans, they clinched the division. They beat the Dolphins 20-12, 9-5 on the season is their record. The Dolphins really needed that game to stay within striking distance for the playoffs. Now with only 3 games left, they are 2 games back of the Chargers, and they're in the pack with the Colts and the Bengals, as mentioned earlier. Maybe they get lucky and they're playing some teams that don't really care about the games anymore, and they could go 3-0 and just hope that the Chargers lose a game or two. It's possible, but not likely in my opinion. This was really their opportunity. And then speaking of that AFC wildcard race, the Broncos beat the Colts 31-13. That game had a lot of implications, despite the fact that, you know, on paper, who really cares? It doesn't really feel like it was a big game, but at the same time, if the Broncos were 8-6 and the Colts were 7-7, all of a sudden now you have 2 8-6 teams in the AFC West with the Broncos and the Chargers, and the Colts at 7-7 breathing down both of their necks. But instead, you have the Broncos at 9-5 and the Colts at 6-8 because the Broncos beat the Colts 31-13. But that is all we have of a lengthy combined football review. The good news is basketball only really has 10 to 12 relevant games going on right now, so we'll change gears and talk about those games. Starting with college basketball, Arkansas beat number 14 Michigan 89-87. Tennessee and Miami were also at this event. Miami sucks. Tennessee's way better. Not going to mention that game. Great win for Arkansas. Coach Cal needed it. Bad loss for Michigan in the sense that they really should have won this game. If they can just stop turning the ball over, this is one of the better teams in the country. you know, against Wisconsin, they didn't turn it over. That's why they end up moving into the top 15 last week. Then against Arkansas, they turn it over a ton. That's why they moved down to number 24 in the polls. I think that's the best way to explain this season. That's kind of how Michigan is going to operate for the rest of the year. If they become consistent at taking care of the ball, this is a really good team. I don't think they're going to be consistent, though, and that's going to be the thing that holds them back from being, you know, a title contender. And then speaking of faux title contenders, Illinois beat number 20 Wisconsin 86-80. Wisconsin's third loss in a row. Illinois easily supposed to win this game, but they really, really needed it. This was not a game that they could afford to lose. They needed to be a quad one victory. Wisconsin's not in that territory currently, but I would expect them to probably move into the top 30 in the net by the end of the year. If they don't, they don't. But it's still going to be a high quad two win at worst. Illinois should have won this game, though. They did. Then number three, Iowa State beat Iowa 89-80. Going to talk about the Big Ten a lot for the next 30 seconds or so. Iowa kind of choked this game. Hate to say it, but they were up by as many as 13 points in this game. They were up by 7 at the half. And frankly, Iowa State didn't really take a meaningful lead, I think, until like 4 minutes left in the game. They took it over from there, and on the, you know, in the end, it looks like, okay, they were down in the first half, but they controlled the second half. That really wasn't the case. Iowa had full control of this game for about 27 minutes, pretty much, maybe 33 if you want to go that far. And then Iowa State just kind of controlled the last 7 to 8 minutes, but that's what makes this team so good. They're an amazing defensive team. Iowa was getting a lot of shots up early in the game. They were making a lot of contested threes. Once those stopped falling in, Iowa State doesn't give up many good looks. And Iowa wasn't able to take advantage of the ones that they did have later in the game. Iowa State wins this game. Then number one, Tennessee, continues the theme of top teams beating the Big Ten. They beat Illinois 66-64. Again, unranked Big Ten teams. They're hanging in there with these upper echelon teams. It's important for that to happen, for a conference to get, you know, highly ranked in the non-con and then beat up on each other in the conference season, however that works out. And then who makes the NCAA tournament, obviously, is based on, you know, who can stay at 500, really just stay afloat in conference play, as long as your conference is good enough. I think the Big Ten has gotten to the level that 10-10 will make the NCAA tournament, as long as you didn't have a really weak non-conference schedule or a disastrous non-conference slate, despite the fact that you didn't play a hard schedule, or even if you did play a hard schedule but you lost a bunch of those games, talking about Rutgers, then maybe it won't work out. The SEC, on the other hand, I mean, you look at the wins that this conference has gotten, and I'm about to get to three more of them. This is one of the best conferences ever. In my lifetime, I have never seen a basketball conference this dominant. I know people talked about the fact that the Big 12 was really good at the top. The SEC was right there with them. That was kind of the debate. There's no debate anymore. The SEC is the best basketball conference. It's not close. This is the best conference in my lifetime. And I'm not saying that on eye test only, although eye test, I very confidently would say that. Ken Palm says that too. But the best conference that I've been alive for was apparently the 2004 ACC. Can't say I remember it. I was literally a toddler. I was actually a baby. But the SEC this year is insane. This is a really, really ridiculous conference, as evidenced by the fact that number two Auburn beat Ohio State, 91-53. So even if you take Tennessee's performance and you say, okay, they're the number one team in the country, they might be undefeated, but they didn't dominate against Illinois. Well, Illinois is one of the better teams in the Big Ten. Ohio State is somewhere in the middle, and Auburn just embarrassed them. I mean, this game was ugly. Jani Broome almost outscored and out-rebounded the entire Ohio State team in the first half. Auburn is the best team in the country. That's also not close. And they are in the best conference in the country. Until someone goes and beats Auburn that isn't Duke on their home field, which is obviously, or home court, which is obviously one of the toughest environments in the country, and frankly, they got a few lucky bounces in that game too, you can't tell me that Auburn isn't the best team. Tennessee's going to have to go beat them for me to even remotely consider the fact that Auburn couldn't be the number one team. And even if Tennessee does beat them, I don't know where they play them, but if they play them at home, I still might say Auburn's a better team, to be quite honest with you, depending on the game. Then you have number five, Kentucky, who beat Louisville 93-85. You know, it was a closer game. Kentucky, I don't really think, is going to stay top five too long, but they're here right now. That's what's important. Speaking of a team that could take that spot, number seven, Alabama, beat Creighton 83-75. Obviously, this is the preseason number two in the country, so a team with a lot of high expectations, and I think, frankly, they haven't played up to the expectations, but they played only a little bit below, and that's good enough. That's still a top 10 team, despite the fact that they might be the fourth or fifth best team in their conference. But Alabama playing really well recently. And then speaking of a team that didn't avoid the upset bug, Dayton beat number 6 Marquette, talked about that in weekend predictions. UConn beat Gonzaga, talked about that in weekend predictions. Number 9 Florida beat Arizona State 83-66. Florida and Tennessee both undefeated. I think the SEC actually starts conference play maybe this weekend. So, yeah, those teams, they're going to dominate throughout that conference. I don't think Florida's going to go undefeated or anything like that, but you're looking at a team that could be a 3 or 4 seed, as high as a 2 seed. I don't think they can get to the 1 seed because they just didn't really play anybody that good in their non-conference schedule. Although they do play North Carolina tomorrow, I believe. No, that's later today, actually. So that's a big game. If they can get that win on a neutral court, maybe you can say their resume is good enough that they could be a 1 seed, but it's a little too early to talk about that. But they did get this big win over Arizona State. Currently, quad 1 win. A&M beat Purdue. Talked about that one already. Number 13, Oklahoma. They beat Oklahoma State 80-65. They're also undefeated. In case you forgot, they're in the SEC now. So another top 15 team that's in the SEC and having a great season. Oklahoma plays Michigan tomorrow, so we'll see if the undefeated streak stays there. That's going to be a really good game. At the Jumpman Invitational, same event Florida and North Carolina are playing each other at. Then you have Memphis, who beat number 16 Clemson 87-82 in overtime. A big road win for Memphis to bounce back from the loss to Arkansas State. Memphis would have such a great resume if the only blemish they had was a loss to Auburn. That would be the best resume in the country, other than Auburn's, if they were able to have it. But unfortunately, because they lost to Arkansas State, it gets a little tainted. They are 5-1 in quad one games. Just ridiculous. Memphis should be a top 15 team, although they did the same thing last year and then collapsed at the end of the season. So you never know. But then number 20, Wisconsin beat Butler 83-74. Good win for the Big Ten there. Number 24, UCLA beat Arizona 57-54 there. Or another good win for the Big Ten there. Number Cincinnati beat Xavier in the Crosstown Shootout. Talked about that in predictions. And then finally, the last three. Number 25, Mississippi State beat McNeese State 66-63. On name, brand, and rankings alone, that doesn't sound like a good result for the SEC, but McNeese is a lot better than, you know, non-college basketball nerds like me would realize. A very, very good team there. And then SMU beat LSU 74-64. Finally, a team beat the SEC. Thank God, because the ACC, as we know, they went 2-14 in the SEC Challenge. And overall this year, they've struggled playing the SEC. Maybe the flip of the narrative could come soon. I don't know. I don't really think so. But, you know, SMU beating LSU was the start. Both of those teams on the bubble. So SMU getting that win is pretty big. And then maybe North Carolina could beat Florida, and that could start to flip the fortune a little bit for later in the year. And then finally, Georgia beat Grand Canyon 73-268. I know I said that there weren't many important games, but really those all took place on Saturday. So didn't feel like there were many important games, but I guess I talked about them for long enough. And then finally, in the NBA, I really feel like the only relevant thing to talk about is the NBA Cup. That's at least what the league probably wants people to talk about. But look, the semis, the Bucks beat the Hawks, and the Thunder beat the Rockets. I talked about that in my weekend predictions. I like what I'm seeing from the Bucks. After the terrible, terrible start to the season, they have finally put stuff together, and I'm starting to believe in what I'm seeing from this team. And then on the Thunder side of things, they just continue to dominate. And because of that, I'm predicting that in the championship game later tonight, I have the Thunder beating the Bucks. Can't give you a score prediction because it's the NBA. I mean, what uses a score prediction? Not to be rude, but it's true. Very hard games to predict score-wise, but going to the Eastern Conference standings, you have the Cavs in first at 23-4. Ridiculous record for them. The Celtics in second at 21-5, just 1.5 games back. Another ridiculous record there. And then there's kind of a three-team clump. The Knicks, who are 16-10, the Magic, who are 17-11, and then the Bucks, who are 14-11, despite that terrible start to the season. They're 8-2 in their last 10. They're dominating the NBA Cup, and they deserve to be in that upper echelon, especially because the Magic are very, very injured and probably will slide down in these standings pretty soon. Not too far behind them, the Miami Heat at 13-11. Also not too far behind, the Hawks at 14-13. They did pretty well in the NBA Cup themselves. Obviously got all the way to the semifinals. They obviously lost that game, but 7-3 in their last 10, so pretty good there as well. And then the rest of this conference isn't really too relevant, but the Pacers are at 12-15, so are the Bulls. Those are the 8-9 teams. The Pistons are 10th, but despite that, at 11-16, despite the fact that they're only a half game ahead of the Nets. The Nets are apparently trading Dennis Schroeder at 10-16, even though they're one game out of a playoff spot, because the East just isn't very good. The Sixers are now at 8-16. They're 6-4 in their last 10. Honestly, I think if they play at that level for the rest of the year, just go 6-4 every 10 games, they're probably going to make the playoffs, as crazy as it sounds, that they could claw out of their terrible start with really not even any big winning streaks. I think it's easily possible because the East just isn't very good. Then finally, the three teams at the bottom, the Hornets and the Raptors, 7-19, 7-20, and then the Wizards, who are the worst team in the league, at 3-21. Now, in the West, you have the Thunder. They have been the best team. They are 9-1 in their last 10. They've won 5 in a row. 20-5 is their record. The Grizzlies are at 18-9, looking pretty good as well. They're 8-2 in the last 10, although they just lost that game to the Lakers. Two teams right behind them, the Western Conference champions, the reigning champions, the Mavericks at 17-9, and also the Rockets at 17-9, playing pretty well, obviously, evidenced by the fact that they got to the NBA Cup semifinals. Then you have kind of the weird clump in the middle of really good, really talented teams, I should say, that are all within a game of each other, but none of them are really pulling away. It's the Nuggets, the Suns, the Timberwolves, the Warriors, the Clippers, and the Lakers, who are all somewhere between 5.5 and 6.5 games back of first place, which is, of course, the Oklahoma City Thunder. Nuggets leading that group at 14-10. The Suns, Warriors, and Timberwolves are all at 14-11, although trending in opposite directions. The Nuggets at 6-4 in their last 10. The Magic, by the way, and the Mavericks and the Grizzlies, by the way, 8-2. But the Suns at 5-5, the Wolves at 6-4. Those two teams kind of stabilizing at that 14-11 record. But the Warriors are 2-8 in their last 10. They have played some terrible basketball recently. They're looking for trade help with Dennis Schroeder. Then you have the Clippers, who just absolutely hammered the Jazz tonight, 144-107 last night, I should say. But 15-12 is their record. The Lakers, not too far behind at 14-12. And then just on the outside looking in, you have the Spurs at 13-13. The Kings at 13-14. And then the three teams in the bottom in the West, Blazers at 8-18, Jazz at 5-20, and the Pelicans at 5-22. But with all of that, a lengthy playoff preview, a review of a really exciting NFL weekend, a great day in college basketball, plus a game or two, that is all we have for this episode of the 4th and 24 podcast. Please be sure to check out our next podcast, which will be on Christmas Eve. That's kind of fun, where we will look back at my weekend predictions, have a review of the first week of the playoff, and maybe change our predictions based on the matchups, who knows. And bowl season as well. There will be some other bowl games before then. Look at week 16 in the NFL. And once again, talk about basketball with another weekly review. Start of conference play in a few conferences, so maybe some more interesting games to talk about that are a little more off the radar. And then, of course, the NBA as well, which will have, finally, the NBA Cup Finals that will be tonight, so we can talk about those. But in the meantime, please be sure to check out all of my additional content, including my weekly college basketball bracket updates and my picks for next weekend's games, which will be posted on Thursday, brackets on Wednesday, all that on social media at 4th and 24 on Twitter and Instagram, and some of that content on our website, 4th and 24.com. That's the number 4, THAND.com. Thank you for listening.